Can everyone see the PowerPoint?
Yes.
Yes, okay. All right, so, well, it's only a portion of it. I apologize for, I don't know why that's not picking that up now. But this is an excerpt from Mr. Ostrowski's document. It is on page 12 of his document, and it is the table which summarizes the air emissions standards and the results of the modeling. And this is the diagram which indicates, which summarizes the results. Again, you see here the property boundary of the proposed facility. This red line is the fence line, the buildings inserted, and the point that had the most, the highest levels of reading, all within the standard, but the highest level recorded from the modeling results. And with that, I will turn it over to Mr. Ostrowski. Do you want me to stop share, Mr. Ostrowski, so we can see his face? Okay. Okay, Kevin.
I'm sorry, actually, Ms. Bertarcci, this is Eric Kennedy. I was going to start with walking the board members through the memo and then pause partway through it, if that's all right.
That's fine.
For Kevin to talk about modeling results.
Yes.
Okay.
Go for it.
All right. Thanks, Ms. Bertarcci, and good morning, everyone. My name is Eric Kennedy. I'm the director of the Division of Licensing and Compliance in the Bureau of Air Quality. Also available from a virtual sense are Jeff Crawford, Director of the Bureau of Air Quality, Jane Gilbert, Licensing Section Manager, Patrick Sherman, Licensing Engineer for this application, and Kevin Ostrowski, Senior Meteorologist with the Bureau of Air Quality. Let me just check, can everybody hear me all right, Ruth Ann? Okay. Let me start just by going through the summary memo that we provided to the board for these deliberations, and then we can address any questions from board members that they may have or staff. And as I said, partway through my going through the board memo to the board, I'm going to pause and let Kevin talk about the modeling results. So the department received an application for an air emission license from Nordic Aqua Farms on May 17, 2019. The application was for a minor source license under our Chapter 115, which is our major and minor source air emission license regulation. The application was reviewed for completeness, was found to contain the required elements for a new minor source application, and we accepted it for processing on June 13th, 2019. The primary emission units, as Ms. Bertarcci mentioned, addressed in the application included 8 generator sets at 2 megawatts each of electrical generating capacity. Proposed operating restrictions included only operating 7 of the 8 generators at one time, and a combined annual fuel use limit of 900,000 gallons of distillate fuel per year. This is the equivalent of approximately 10% of all possible operating time in a year for these engines. As you can see in the table on page 2 of the memo, final proposed annual emissions for the facility are well below both modeling threshold levels and major source threshold levels. The level of modeling required for a new minor source is determined by the department on a case-by-case basis. And this is important. This is for a new minor source. It's determined by the department on a case-by-case basis. Typically, if proposed annual emissions are below modeling threshold levels, the department does not require modeling analysis to be completed. However, in response to concerns raised during the public comment period about the proposed facility's potential emissions and their potential impact on local air quality, the department decided to perform an in-house modeling demonstration to address these concerns. The first modeling analysis performed by the department was in the November-December timeframe, and based on modeling inputs provided by Nordic Aquafarms, demonstrated that operation of the facility as proposed would comply with all ambient air quality standards. Modeling incorporated the proposed operating scheme, presumed fence line locations, building configurations, engine specifications, and stack exhaust parameters submitted by the applicant in response to the department's November 8, 2019 information request. A summary of the modeling assumptions, results, and supporting data was released by the department on December 19th. And I'm sorry, there was an error in there that should say 2019, not 2020. Written testimony received by the public hearings, in the public hearings held in February, and verbal testimony heard during the public hearings contained information conflicting with some of the inputs used in the department's first modeling analysis. Because of these conflicts, the department requested that the board keep the record open to allow the department time to perform a second modeling analysis using updated, more representative information. The second modeling analysis was performed in March of 2020 using updated information, including manufacturers' expected engine exhaust temperatures and flow rates. This modeling analysis also demonstrated that operation of the facility, even if operated continuously for the entire year, would comply with all ambient air quality standards. A summary of the second modeling analysis, including all assumptions, results, and supporting data, was released by the department on March 16th, 2020. So at this point, I'll just pause and allow Kevin Ostrowski, our senior meteorologist, to go over the results of the modeling demonstration that we did in-house. Kevin?
Can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Good morning, Presiding Officer DeShane, members of the board. This is, for those of you who can't see me, this is Kevin Ostrowski. I'm the senior meteorologist and dispersion modeling person in the air permitting section since 1993. I was the person that conducted both modeling analyses from the first one in November-December timeframe of 2019, and then the second one earlier, just a couple months ago, I think in late February or early March. As Eric stated, testimony at the BEP hearing in Belfast in February, we had some conflicting information from data put into the model during the first round of modeling, and I think the record was left open by Presiding Officer DeShane to conduct a second round of air dispersion modeling using the updated data that we learned about, or try to get it as accurate as possible. So when we did the modeling, we incorporated penthouse structures atop buildings number one and number two. And for those of you who don't know, penthouse structures are usually small enclosed structures on top of larger buildings that may house HVAC equipment, piping, plumbing, not in this case, but maybe like an elevator shaft or something that sticks up from the top of the building, things of that nature. We incorporated the new fence line that would preclude access to the general public. And then through a series of emails and phone calls, our permitting engineer, Patrick Sherman, we were able to contact the manufacturer directly to get the best possible emissions data as well as temperature and flow data as well. So when we did the updated modeling in February, March timeframe, I know Ms. Bertacci wanted to put it up on the screen, and I think it appears on page 12 of the my write-up. That would be the write-up dated March 13th, 2020. There are a series of two tables where I compared the maximum predicted impact that the model computes, basically assuming 8,760 hours of operation of the engines, and take the maximum impact on a pollutant by pollutant basis. There's the corresponding location and receptor elevation above sea level of the maximum impact. And then we add in a conservative background number. And then if you add the impact plus the background number for a total impact and compare that against the National Ambient Air Quality Standard on a pollutant by pollutant basis, there are two tables there where this comparison can be seen. All of the pollutants were able to successfully meet the National Ambient Air Quality Standard values that are prescribed by EPA. And then further down, there is a diagram of the layout on page 13 that identifies exactly where the location of the maximum 1 hour NOx, NO2 and PM2.5 impacts. And the reason that I only listed these, the area of this maximum impact, is because for other pollutants such as SO2 or CO, the predicted impact was so far below the National Ambient Air Quality Standard. These were the two that were probably of most interest, and I think at least at the hearing, it seemed to be the pollutants that most of the discussion had focused in upon. So I believe that's it for me. Eric, did you have anything else?
Thank you, Kevin. Yep, just going back to the memo that we provided to the board now. Starting on the bottom of page 3 and continuing on to page 4, you will find a list of issues that have been raised during the process. These are not all of the issues raised, but the issues we thought board members would have the most questions about. First one, Nordic should have submitted new application, a new application when information about the proposed project changed. In accordance with Chapter 115, the department routinely works with applicants to incorporate updated information after their application has been accepted without requiring the submittal of a new application package. Now, if things changed in a significant way, then there is that opportunity that the department could say, this is significant information that needs to require a new application. But in this case, we didn't think any of the updated information was of that type of nature. Another issue, Nordic should have completed modeling and submitted it as part of their application. I think we've already addressed that issue earlier in the memo. For a new minor source, the level of modeling is determined by the department on a case-by-case basis. Emissions from construction activities should have been included in any modeling analysis. Traditionally, emissions from temporary and fugitive sources are accounted for in modeling results by using conservative but representative background values added to model values for emissions from licensed stationary sources. Emissions from construction activities are not handled directly in modeling because they are fugitive in nature, not readily quantifiable. Temporary, in many cases, are mobile because they move around from place to place, and they're intermittent. We do address fugitive dust emissions in every license that we issue, whether it be a minor source license or a major source license, from the perspective of requiring the source to put together, develop a best management practices plan to address fugitive emissions. So that's one way that in every license we address it. There may be other ways that those emissions could be addressed. If the board were to issue a license, we could discuss different conditions that could be imposed to address those. Another issue that was brought up is that emissions from startup shutdown periods for the engines should have been modeled. Startup and shutdown events are of a limited duration, particularly for engines like these. Startup and shutdown events typically last no longer than 30 minutes each and are not considered normal operation. Therefore, they are not routinely included in modeling analyses. The modeling the department conducted conservatively included emissions from 7 engines operating at a time and continuously all year long at maximum output. And the final issue that was raised that I want to talk about, construction activities may include the use of a portable concrete batch plant on site, which should have been addressed. I think we heard this during the hearing in February. Any portable concrete batch plant that may be located at the facility would be required to be licensed separately by the owner or operator of that facility, either through a Chapter 115 license or through a general permit process. Moving on to the top of page 5 of the memo is a list of criteria stipulated in Chapter 115 to determine whether or not to grant an air emission license. This includes criteria such as receiving a complete application, emissions receiving best practical treatment. For new sources like this, this means best available control technology, meeting applicable state emission standards, meeting ambient air quality standards, license conditions providing for compliance with all applicable requirements, complying with applicable public participation and review procedures, and the incorporation of all control technology requirements and other operating limitations into the license. And finally, let me address typical compliance assurance methods associated with this type of source. In accordance with Chapter 115, the department may impose any appropriate and reasonable license conditions to ensure or maintain compliance with any requirements, emission limitations, ambient air quality standards, or regulations, including equipment descriptions and operating and emission limitations, monitoring and testing methods and requirements, record keeping and reporting requirements for these engines that might include documentation and record keeping for site-wide fuel usage records, operating logs for each of the engines, and maintenance records. It would include the summary of ambient air quality impact analysis, all standard license conditions required by Chapter 115, engine certification requirements, control equipment parameter monitoring requirements, compliance inspections, and incident investigations if we receive any types of complaints about the facility. This concludes my summary of the memo to the board, and we'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have. Thank you.
And with that in mind, I'll go to the board to see if there are questions. And I do have some, but I'll defer to those who want to go first. Ms. Lessard, you look unmuted.
I would be unmuted. Just two questions. One, in regard to the discussion of the potential for this portable concrete batch plant, if that were to occur and a licensing process ensued, would that be a plus-plus with the existing air license on that facility to ensure that it wasn't licensed in a vacuum, so to speak, that the combined effects of that air quality impact would be in addition to those already modeled for the overall project?
It would be a separate license for that concrete batch plant. We certainly would, at the time of licensing that facility, we would look at what the whether or not that facility triggered any modeling requirements under Chapter 115. If it did, then we certainly would do modeling that would involve both the concrete batch plant and the Nordic Aqua Farms facility.
Could that be a condition of approval?
That
modeling would be done if such an application were made?
Yes, it could be.
Okay, I lied. Three questions. One more. And does the fact that this is application is proposed in phases, there was some discussion of this, but I didn't see it in the response memo, that if phase two doesn't happen, if it doesn't happen, it's phased, does that in any way change the outputs of your model based on the fact that the generators and all of that is going to be present no matter what the project is, whether it's just phase one or phase one and phase two?
I'm going to ask Mr. Ostrowski if he could address that question.
I think that if the fence line were constructed in the manner as proposed, whether or not phase two were built, if the fence line precluded any public access to any of the Nordic property, I don't believe it would change any of the results. The modeling conservatively assumed, it assumed seven generators operating simultaneously. If phase two wasn't built, they'd still have the ability to run seven generators simultaneously. Again, if the fence line were constructed as proposed, I don't think that changes the results in any way.
I just wasn't sure if these are big buildings, if the size and scope of a missing building somehow changed where the emissions went or in what directions, those kind of things, because I would assume that depending on the location of the generators, that some of the what gets absorbed and moved was by buildings, you know, that had an impact to where they moved off site.
Yeah, it could. I can only say that we modeled both buildings because that was part of the plan, and to do iterations of what ifs is, I don't know that is particularly productive. I'm not sure.
Let me just add, you know, if the board were to issue a license and that was something that the board was concerned about, we could add a condition into the license or discuss how we might address that issue. You know, it's possible that we could do additional modeling or have the applicant do additional modeling to address that situation if the phase two didn't go forward.
Thank you. I'm not sure of the total timeline. I know there's estimates, but depending on how long that goes with no second phase being constructed, if there was impact, you wouldn't know it until you actually looked for it. So maybe some time frame were it would be involved, that if phase two didn't occur within X amount of time, then modeling could be done to ensure that that hadn't changed the parameters of this project in terms of the air license. I'm just thinking out loud. That's how I process. I apologize.
Sure. Yeah, no problem.
If I can follow up on that question before I go to Mr. Pelletier, is it the department's understanding that all seven generators would still possibly be running when there's only phase one in operation? Or will that number simply be reduced to accommodate the size of what's necessary?
I'm not sure I can answer that question. That's probably more of a business decision from the applicant. But what they've applied for is the operation of seven engines, and so that's what we're reviewing in the application.
Great, thank you. Mr. Pelletier?
Thank you. First, I appreciate the analysis and the presentation here, because I think it's fairly straightforward to follow. Air emission zone is not my my forte, so I just wanted to kind of affirm a couple things. One, it sounds as though, I'm not sure what the number of gallons per generator, per year or per hour, the consumption is, but we've got a 900,000 gallon limit. And if it's only operating no more than 10% of the total time, see, that basically means we've got, if all the power went out, they have essentially just over a month to operate. And if you got the full facility, you'd probably be running all seven generators. But do I have that right? It'd be about a month of operating with no power at all. Is that how that's how it is modeled?
That sounds about right. Yes, Mr. Pelletier.
And I understand too, there's a 100 ton per year limit for many of the, a lot of the different parameters here. And I look at the table that was put together there, and they all seem to be below that. The carbon monoxide one is a little, I'm not sure exactly what's going on there, but it's still within half of what's limited. Am I reading that right?
Yes, that's correct.
But with the volatile organic compounds, that's half of that per year. What kind of sources would we have for that? What potential sources would be for volatile organics out there?
Well, you do have some volatile organic compounds emitted from the engines themselves. Not much. It's volatile organic compounds from engines are more of a, whatever percentage of the fuel doesn't completely combust in the process. So there would be some emissions of VOCs, volatile organic compounds from the engines. There may be some emissions of volatile organic compounds from other processes within the facility, but there or from the wastewater treatment facility, but those are all of a fugitive type nature, not being directed through an individual stack. So those are the types of sources that could contribute to volatile organic compound emissions.
I understand that fish waste is all a separate issue, but there's been a lot of discussion about how that's handled. That may be a possible source, but it's not likely to be, again, more of a fugitive type of emission. Is that how you're looking at that?
That's correct.
All right. Again, you guys did a good job pulling this together. It's easy for someone even like myself to follow, so thanks.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Other questions from board members? Seeing none, I do have a couple myself. We talked a little bit about the startup, and it's described as being maybe 30 minutes at most before the additional emissions that come from startup and shutdown happen. But if all seven generators start up at once, does that create a temporary load we should be concerned about?
Well, the startup process, as I mentioned, is very quick. You know, less than 30 minutes typically. And what's happening during a startup is, you know, the flow rate is low at that point. So the flow rate hasn't come up to where it would be when they're up, when the engines are operating at more of a full load condition. So the flow rate would be less. The concentration of emissions during a startup may be higher, but the mass emission rate would probably not be as high as the maximum pound per hour emission limit that we would have modeled at the maximum production levels of the engines.
Okay. Some of the intervener concern seems to be that we're not taking sufficient account of cumulative effects of all the emissions. And I reference wastewater treatment, for instance, has its own set of emissions. Coupled with the generators running at the same time, we don't seem to be as concerned as they would like us to be about the cumulative impacts of those. Can you address that a little bit?
Sure, yeah. Emissions that we would expect from the wastewater treatment plant would, as I mentioned before, would be more of a volatile organic compound nature. So it wouldn't be the same type of emissions that you would get from the engines other than the volatile organic compound portion. And volatile organic compounds, there is no ambient air quality standard for volatile organic compounds. The closely related standard for that would be for ozone, which is not a parameter that we model. Ozone is addressed more on a regional basis for modeling purposes. So it's not something that we would include in a modeling demonstration like this.
Okay. Lastly, I guess there has been a repetitive conflation, it seems to me, when I read all the testimony and the comments, that we're not taking the cumulative impacts of all the operations going on. At the same time, we're getting all the impacts from construction, the dust, the fugitive emissions from that. The conflation seems to be in error, or at least my understanding may be in error, because not all these things are happening simultaneously. And some of these emissions are taking place under different regulatory regimes. Site law, for instance, should regulate some of how you handle dust in trucks and construction versus what's in your air license. How close did I get to an accurate understanding?
I think you're exactly right, Presiding Officer DeShane. Emissions from construction activities we would expect would be primarily of a particulate matter nature, primarily fugitive. And those emissions are addressed and or will be addressed would be addressed in some of the analysis and findings that the Land Bureau would make as part of the site location of development license. And as I mentioned, we also address those fugitive types of emissions from construction activities in the air emission license by requiring a best management practices plan being developed to address how those emissions will be controlled and minimized.
Okay, I think I believe I have Mr. Sanford and Ms. Bensiger in the queue. We'll go to Mr. Sanford first, if you're ready.
Good morning. Yes, thank you. Are these 2-megawatt diesel sets what we typically see as auxiliary power systems and things like water treatment plants, wastewater treatment plants and such?
I'd say they're on the larger size for what you may see in a typical municipal wastewater treatment type plant. I'd say they're, you know, the idea is the same, but they're more on a larger size than what you would see in a typical municipal size wastewater treatment plant.
Okay, thank you.
Ms. Bensiger?
Am I unmuted?
You are.
Okay, thank you. There was some discussion at the hearing about emissions from construction vehicles. And if I recall correctly, there was some discussion about different types of engines in more modern construction vehicles. Can you speak to that at all, or is that a question that should be directed more to the Land Bureau staff?
Sure, I can speak to that. I do remember that being brought up at the hearing, and there are different emission standards associated with different vehicles, depending on the size of the vehicle, the size of the engine of the vehicle, when the engine was manufactured. So certainly the newer vehicles have engines that meet more strict emission standards. And so that is something, if that's something that the board is concerned about, if the board were to decide to issue licenses, that is something that could be addressed, whether it be addressed in the site location of development license or in the air emission license. I'm not sure which one would make the most sense, but that could be addressed in either license.
Speaking just for myself, I'm not sure I understand the issue well enough to know what I would recommend as a condition, or even if one's appropriate, because we really, my understanding is we didn't cover that very much in terms of either the hearing or in the application. Can you enlighten me a little more?
Yeah, so during the hearing, it was brought up that emissions from mobile sources such as trucks and off-road equipment like bulldozers, excavation equipment, would be on site during the construction process at the facility. And the concern was that those emissions from those engines of those vehicles were not addressed in the modeling demonstration. Which is true, that's not something we typically address in a modeling analysis, because those emissions are, again, intermittent. You don't know exactly where those types of vehicles are going to be on the site, so it's hard to really put those types of emissions into the type of modeling demonstration that we do. So it was brought up during the hearing that, you know, could that be addressed in another way, as far as requiring that engines or vehicles that are used at the facility be of a certain, what they call tier engine. They go from tier one, tier zero, tier four type engines. And could we stipulate in the license condition, or could the board stipulate in the license condition that any vehicle used on site be of a certain tier level, or the vehicle be manufactured after a certain year, to ensure that emissions from those vehicles are as low as possible for the equipment that's used on site.
Great. What I'm wrestling with is, do I have enough information to be able to make that recommendation for a condition for the license? And I don't think I have that yet, but it's something I would want to ponder further, or maybe that's part of our discussion later. Are there other questions from the board? Yes, Ms. Lessard.
Just a couple. In listening to the most recent questions, it came to mind that the air license is a post-construction license. This is the operation of the facility itself, and this is a very large construction project that will include a lot of the kind of equipment that Ms. Chair Deshane was just discussing, for the period of more than a year, which is a construction. And so I guess my question is, what's temporary? Is temporary whatever it takes until you get to the place where it's already built, and how long can temporary be before we have to consider those kind of impacts?
Sure. Well, I can answer that from an air quality standpoint. From our regulations, do stipulate what is meant by temporary in Chapter 100, and temporary is defined in Chapter 100 as being less than a 5-year period.
Okay, thank you. And the second question is, many of us who live in Maine have generators. They start every week to make sure that when the power goes out, they're actually going to run. So I'm assuming that these generators on site will have a regular check-in period to run. But if it's for peak shaving, that the majority of their operation would be happening in our warm weather months, because that's when power usage is highest in Maine. And so I guess my question is there any seasonality factored into how this load works over a year? Because it's highly likely that for peak shaving purposes, and those of us who have high electric use facilities do this, but we do it in the hottest part of the year when there are other impacts on air quality as well. So how does that factor into this?
Yeah, I understand your point, and that is something that that states throughout the Northeast region do look at. It's called high demand efficiency days. But from an air licensing perspective, it doesn't come into that that picture. Maybe it should, but it doesn't at this point.
And that was my question, whether that the fact that the seasonality of this use will perhaps create higher numbers during that time period than they would in December or January or March, just based on what else, the other stuff that's impacting your background changes over time.
Sure. Yeah, and that's probably a longer discussion, but just to briefly address that, ozone does form more, of course, in the summer months when the sun is at its peak and temperatures are at their peak. But in Maine, most of our ozone issue comes from transport up the Northeast coast around Boston and Cape Cod out into the ocean, and then comes back in on the coast of Maine. That's primarily how most of the ozone that we see comes into the state of Maine. We've actually done some analysis that shows sources in Maine have very little impact on the ozone levels either in Maine or higher ozone levels that are seen down in like New Hampshire or Massachusetts.
But, thank you very much.
Yeah, that is a longer discussion.
Well, no, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay, I hear Mr. Parker clicking his pen.
Yes, a simple question, probably for Eric. We're talking about generators. Are these going to be all new Tier 4 operated generators, or are they allowed to use something else?
Yes, as part of the best available control technology, and I'm sorry I didn't put that in my briefing, but as part of the best available control technology analysis, all these engines will be Tier 4 engines and will be equipped with state-of-the-art control devices for carbon monoxide, nitrogen oxide, volatile organic compounds, and particulate matter.
Okay, that was my basic question. Thank you.
Okay, there are other questions from the board. Seeing none, Ms. Bertacci, can you update us on what we need to discuss now versus moving on?
I would like first to just ask one question of staff on the air issues.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming Nordic has propose the number of generators they feel they need to have at the site. But is there any information in the record that indicates whether or not they would need to be running, if all the power is out from the grid, would they need to run all 7 of them, full capacity in order to meet the needs of the facility, the electrical needs of the 2 full build out?
Yeah, I can't recall offhand. I'll ask either Mr. Ostrowski or Ms. Gilbert or Mr. Sherman whether they recall that from the application, any of the application materials.
This is Pat Sherman. I don't believe there was anything in the application material that indicated what they would need to run if they should lose power, but I do remember in the testimony at the hearing in February that the facility talked about having a prioritized load arrangement where, you know, they wouldn't be running, say, the processing facility while they were in a power outage, so they wouldn't need full capacity. They, in their application, they indicated that they would be drawing, requiring 14 megawatts to run the facility, mostly from the grid, but they would use the generators, you know, to supplement that during peak shaving. So the inference is that if everything was up and running fully, they would need around 14 megawatts, and if they weren't processing or if they were prioritizing their load, they would need something less than that. So I would assume based on that, they would not require all seven generators running at 100%.
Thank you.
Great. Any other questions from board or staff? Do we need a discussion amongst the board now, or do we move to the next section? Yes. Okay. I think the question is, what are we going to ask the department to do? What do we need some, should we go forward with any kind of a draft of a permit? What is the board going to be looking for? And maybe you can enlighten us, Ms. Bensiger.
It's not really in a deliberation, the board doesn't really direct the staff what to do, but if the board wants to discuss and react to some of the things the department said at this point, that would be fine. And if the board wanted to discuss some of the things the department said about potential conditions if the board were to ultimately issue a permit, that could enlighten the staff a little bit. But there's no voting, right. And you know, the board shouldn't be making any final judgments on anything today.
Right. Yeah, I think just to open up a brief discussion, I suppose the one question I had about it was really directed at those construction vehicles and whether there should be some consideration about what tier of equipment is necessary on a construction project this big so that we don't have an additional load of pollutants hitting the atmosphere in the area. I don't personally know how to answer that question. There's just nothing in the record for me to make that kind of decision. How does anybody else feel on the board?
Mr. Bob, Parker. I'll comment quickly. I think the construction equipment has to meet certain standards as they operate right now with the equipment they have on various sites. Their oversight on exhaust, emissions, all that. If we come out and demanded or recommend the staff demand all Tier 4 engines, the cost of the construction vehicle is probably the quadruple. We run into that in the boats right now. On marine boats, new ones have to have that, where the old ones can do certain things to comply with the regulations. And the new boat engines now are costing three times as much as the old ones. But the old ones still work. They just have to be properly maintained. They have to be monitored, stuff like that. So I really think we have to sort of rely on the staff looking at that. And the equipment depends on who the contractor is, but to come out and demand all Tier 4 engines, I think, would be an extremely complicated and expensive operation.
I do think it may be an opportunity to discuss that with the Land Bureau, too. So I'll tee up that question for them in case they have any input and they can prep for it ahead of time. Anything else from the board on this discussion or any other discussion?
Well, we know they have Tier 4 for the generators. We also know that on February 13th of 2020, they said they would accept a condition of not running seven. I mean, of limiting it to seven and not running eight. They also have 16 megawatt capacity, and they said the generators are for peak shaving. So their intention, as was suggested here, was for not to be even running the 7. But I think, like you said, I think we have to make findings because there are 7 there.
Okay, we're about to move on. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, but the peak 4 specs are in there, and I think it's like I said, for the construction equipment, it'll depend on if it's older, well maintained or not. So I feel like I'm.
Well, one more question.
Sure, Ms. Parker.
One more question for in the. They're limited to 900,000 gallons of fuel. Is the fuel have to meet a certain specification?
Yes, all fuel in the, required in the license is ultra low sulfur distillate fuel. So that is fuel that has a sulfur content limit of 0.0015% by weight. That's for both the generators and any type of equipment that would be operating at a facility would also be using that same ultra low sulfur distillate fuel or diesel fuel.
So they're prohibited from using number 2 or something like that. They have to stay with a low sulfur diesel, right?
Well, it's number 2 is considered distillate fuel, but. Now all number 2 fuel and diesel fuel has the same ultra low sulfur requirement. So it's basically the same type of fuel from a sulfur standpoint.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, seeing nobody else from the board ready to jump in with another question or discussion point, I think we'll take a brief break so that we can bring in Mr. Draper and then the folks from the Land Bureau. So 5 minutes will do.